Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 30th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. And we're also happy to be joined by Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
Fantastic.
Mariah is an author and a bona fide climate hawk. I can guarantee you that. So actually, D.R., I got a message... A question from an email saying, if the world is so terrible, DR, how can you be happy? How can you say that every week you're great? Are you lying? Or are you just, do you have a positive outlook on life?
Well, what was Charles Schulz's old line that just when you think the world is coming to an end, always remember it's already tomorrow in Australia?
That's what I like about you, DR. You have the right outlook on life. So speaking of the right outlook on life, WBUR, which is the NPR station here in the Boston area, always has a good outlook on life. And they happen to be having, through the course of the summer, a lot of reports on climate change, strangely enough. And of course, if you don't live in the Boston area, you can get it online, as they say. There's all kinds of apps and stuff to pick it up. But one of the interesting stories that they talked about was about something called phenology, P-H-E-N. And of course, that's distinct from phrenology. Remember, phrenology is a thing where they feel the bumps on your head and decide if you're a criminal or a saint, right? That's not that's not the right word. That's got an R in it. This is phenology, which is the science of noting the interaction between climate and plants, which, of course, when you think of it, it's incredibly important. I mean, 1,000 years ago, the farmers decided to plant the wheat when when there were certain buds on the trees. And so the idea of measuring that is an old science. But they were talking about people going into the Mount Auburn Cemetery to document the arrival of birds and the leafing out of different kind of plants. It was just an interesting thing. Did you see it, either Mariah or DR? Did either of you hear that report?
I had a chance to hear the report, and it was a fascinating piece. I sent it along to a friend and noted I know this sounds morbid, but the fact that they're doing the study of climate change in a cemetery, and considering the policies of this administration, there'll be many more people in those cemeteries.
Well, what did Maynard Keynes say? Eventually, we're all going to be dead, or we'll all be history or something.
Exactly.
But I had read somewhere that the Mount Auburn Cemetery, if you're not from the Boston area, you may not appreciate it, but the Mount Auburn Cemetery is in near Harvard Square. It's a fairly large place. It's quite beautiful. And that when it was first developed, I guess through the early 1800s or whatever, that it was a place where you went for a picnic on Saturday. I mean, the idea of a morbid, depressing cemetery was not really, it was more of a park that people went to visit their loved ones, but it was also this sort of break from nature, not break from nature, but a return to nature, even in this highly controlled setting where they planted all the trees. Anyway, that's the some sociology behind the cemetery thing. But I found it interesting that they were tracking the earlier and earlier arrival and leafing out of certain kind of plants. And that was the job of the volunteers who were going into the Mount Auburn Cemetery with a little bit of guidance and then helping track the exact dates that things popped on the different trees as a measure of climate change. So it's just and of course it harkens back to Thoreau and the cabin out in Walden Pond, right? Mariah, have you ever been to Walden Pond? I mean, you familiar with that? Have you ever heard of Henry David Thoreau? I'm sure you have.
we I might have written about him in my book, perhaps. Yeah, we've visited many times.
Uh-huh.
You know, back to this phenology, the climate and plants. I don't know if you guys have heard of the free air carbon dioxide enrichment sites, which is a place where, you know, there are forests that they just inundate with carbon dioxide to see what happens to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what they find is that the plants grow really well for maybe a couple of years, and then they get inundated with insects, like massive amounts of insects that really like this enriched carbon,
really,
you know, leaf, and they just decimate the forest.
So this is flooding with what, 1% of carbon dioxide or something? I mean, how do you flood the forest? That's an interesting concept.
They have these, it's a test forest, an 80-acre test forest of like aspens and birches, and they have these big poles with emitters on them that blow, different levels of carbon dioxide based on whether, and ground level ozone, based on whether they're, you know, trying to sort of simulate 2050 conditions or 20.
Wow.
So, and they just research what happens as it gets inundated with the carbon dioxide.
I heard that if in the future with higher carbon dioxide levels, the poison ivy is going to be more, the poison ivy likes the higher carbon dioxide levels. So you're going to need an ocean of calamine lotion to survive.
Or a lot of goats.
Goats
that'll eat the poison ivy for you.
But I think the whole question of the point of this piece on WBUR, it was an audio piece, was that there were volunteers who were actively going out to, of course, based on their love of birding and nature and whatnot, but they were basically citizen scientists working to help fight climate change. I thought it was a nice example of the many different ways that people can get involved in the climate activism, right? You don't have to storm the barricades, right? This is you go to Mount Auburn Cemetery and look for different kind of birds. Kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the other thing that was on the on WBUR was that I guess there was a poll recently, a poll in Massachusetts that tested a lot of things, I guess, but one of the things that it was sought to find out is the level of acceptance of the reality of climate change in amongst the population of Massachusetts. Did either of you guys hear or see that, Mariah, DR?
I did see the poll noting that they said this is the fourth time in 6 years that they've noticed that they've studied, concern about climate change in Massachusetts. According to the story, back in 2011, 77% of registered voters surveyed said they believed the world was getting warmer. In 2015, it's 78%. Now it's 88%. And they recognize that it's being done by the burning of fossil fuels. Although, as I've complained before, they keep using this phrase, human activity, which is a sort of void for vagueness phrase. You know, combing your hair, brushing your teeth, cutting your fingernails doesn't cause climate change. It's the burning of fossil fuels. When media entities use that phrase human activity, those are words where they're sort of trying to couch what the reality is, and that's a problem. They have to say specifically what is causing the world to warm.
It's a euphemism, a gloss over of a ugly thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that I guess one of the interesting questions, I don't know if you got a chance to hear it, Mariah, as well, but they said that it was like 70% of the people in the poll would be willing to pay an extra $10 a month on their electric bill if it could make it clean, green energy. Right? I mean, a little bell started going off in my head about a long-term and sustainable price on carbon and the acceptability
Definitely.
Of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the other thing that I heard on the radio, I guess traffic must have been busy this week. There was a report that talked about that there were some people, like is either Harvard or whatever. No, it was in the Journal of the American Medical Association. They were able to track very carefully the health cost of air pollution, right? So that so there's the EPA limits on how much air pollution there can be in the air, county by county, and that as that level goes up and down, they can basically predict how many people are going to get sick and die, and that it's a significant number even with the current EPA standards, which are of course at risk from our friend the 45th president of the United States. Did he? You guys probably don't listen to as much radio as I do. D.R., did you see that one?
Yes, there was a great piece also from the WBUR and the WBUR site mentioning this new study about, you know, how deadly air pollution is, and it dovetails with the most recent speech from Senator Sheldon Whitehouse's weekly Time to Wake Up speeches, where he discussed the health impacts of climate change and basically made the point that, you know, the dual perversity of the same entities that want to gut any effort to address climate change, also trying to gut any efforts to protect healthcare for millions of Americans, that climate change is making people's healthcare worse. And when they need assistance with that healthcare, it's being stripped from them by the very same government that denies climate change. So it was a brilliant, brilliant speech by Sheldon Whitehouse, dovetailing with this new study.
And what I saw was that the cost of pollution, the cost of this pollution, which of course is climate pollution, it's, I won't say human activities, but I mean it's burning fossil fuels, falls most heavily on the poor and disadvantaged communities. Right, that's where all the pollution is, and it's really, really becomes a social justice issue, an environmental justice issue as well. I don't know.
Absolutely, and a lot of times the sort of the lower income communities, it's harder for them to get their voices heard, you know, difficulties with voting and difficulties in, you know, doing the things that are necessary to make an influence in their communities.
Well, in fact, the report said that oftentimes in disadvantaged communities, people are, they start out less robustly healthy because they don't have the same level of health care, right? And so then you get asthma, you get something. I mean, it's a horribly unfair circumstance. But I mean, the case being that reducing pollution, which of course goes hand in hand, right? The local air pollution goes hand in hand with climate change pollution. So as a climate issue, health is a big deal, and improving local air quality goes hand in hand with climate activism. So tell me, I'm sure both of you have been following the healthcare thing in the Senate, right? I'm sure you've seen that on TV. That it seems like there was a lot of opposition. I mean, there were these videos of people being arrested in the corridors outside of their senator's office, and I guess the question is whether or not you think you can link. I'll throw this one to you, Mariah. Can you link that activism with the, of course, now we know the other day McConnell withdrew the bill. Is there some parallel, is there a lesson for climate hawks in that? Do we need, as climate hawks, do we need to be as vociferous as the, you know, the people that were, of course, there were people in wheelchairs, there were people that knew they were going to be harmed by this bill, right? So the immediate threat was much more easily perceived. But what did you make of it? I mean, Mariah.
Yeah, you know, I saw an interesting quote just kind of painted on a wall somewhere today that says all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good people do nothing. So take hope. We have things to do. Don't be silent. And I think, you know, people getting out there and making a big ruckus to show their disagreement and how, you know, it's going to impact them is so important. And I applaud all those folks that are out there raising their voices. That's what we need.
Right. And I think, DR, do you think that they impacted these senators from, I guess, let's call them red states? I mean, it's just a vocabulary, right? But I mean, the Republican senators that were sort of passively approving of this.
To a certain extent, but as Brad Friedman, who we often cite, he's made the point that it has to be sustained, because if it's not sustained, they may still try to sort of pass this thing as stealthily as possible. Mm-hmm. That the intensity can never wane, because unfortunately, the intensity of those who regarded Obamacare as some sort of, you know, government takeover of healthcare, that intensity never seems to wane. You know, we discussed before what Chris Hayes discussed within the climate context, the asymmetry of intensity,
right,
where, you know, where the deniers always seem to be more motivated than the hawks, where if you still have, if you have the similar asymmetry of intensity, where yes, you have people out there protesting, you know, getting arrested in wheelchairs and what have you, but if it is not as sustained as what we've borne witness to over the past 7 years with the anti-Obamacare forces, then the anti-Obamacare forces are ultimately going to win.
I tend to agree. I guess the question I have, and again, this is for both of you, is like, how do you generate? I mean, you know, I feel deeply about the climate issue, right? But, and I've gone to lobby days and I've gone to protests and stuff. But it just seems like generating the intensity, that level of intensity, having this sort of NRA gun owner like intensity that just stays there for years. I mean, the question is, how do you generate that, right? I mean, how do you get there?
Well,
I guess that's an open question. What do you say, dear?
My longstanding theory that part of the thing that motivates that is media coverage, which is why the people on the other side of the philosophical aisle, you know, developed their own media infrastructure, and why people of a more progressive bent need to do the same.
Yes, well, that's why we're here, right? We're going to try and rouse the rabble. Get everybody going
exactly.
In the
rabble
rousing, right? To sort of, all right. Well, look. Let's put that discussion on, because I had a couple of things I wanted to mention to folks so they would be aware. So, of course, it's now just before the 4th of July, the secular midsummer celebration, where we sacrifice cows and stuff and burn them up on our grills and sacrifice marshmallows to the moon god and all that kind of stuff, right? It's the longest day of the year, basically. It's the beginning of summer. There's going to be a bunch of MCAN events that will happen this summer that you should be aware of and should take advantage of. So let me just list them off. The first of there are actually two opportunities on July 15th at 11 a.m. That's a Saturday. And on Monday, August 7th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, there'll be a tour of a place called the Distillery. Of course, it doesn't distill anything anymore. It's now an apartment complex. But the really intriguing thing about it is that it is designed according to principles that this huge building essentially uses no energy. It is completely passive in the sense that it's hermetically sealed. And it is a wonder of clean the future, basically. And you can take a tour of that building. And the gentleman who is working on it and owns it is a guy named Fred Gordon, who is a former member of the board of MCAN. I highly recommend, if you get a chance, to go see the building he's in. It's an artist colony. It is so cool. You'll really get a kick out of it. So that's one thing. Another thing that's coming up on Thursday, July 27th, down in Kendall Square, is a tour of the cogeneration plant run by the company now called Veolia, right? So you see the Veolia trucks around sometimes. But a cogeneration plant is a place where you generate electricity, and the extra heat that's generated in doing that is used to... It's high-quality heat, so you do something else with it. You either heat buildings or you generate more electricity. And this CoGen plant is open for a tour, so you can go see that. And again, the links are on the MCAN website. And the third thing, which is backed by popular demand, is a tour of the Deer Island facility. So if you've ever taken off from Logan Airport, or if you've ever driven up Route 93, you can see the two little windmills way across the water, and there's these huge domes that are at the end of Winthrop, I guess, is the town. Well, that place is uses solar panels and wind turbines to drive the sewage plant, the water treatment sewage plant that now is a gem of Boston engineering that has cleaned up the Boston Harbor. So this is another great tour. It's very popular. You should try and get in on it if you can. That's Wednesday, August 16th. I do would point out that if you want to go on that tour, because the Deer Island facility is a state place, you have to sign up and fill out a couple forms just so that everyone knows you're a good person. And you can do that by clicking on the website. So those are three really cool things you can do with MCAN this summer. Of course, the fourth fourth interesting thing you can do is to join the MCAN legislative team. So this is an opportunity to be updated on legislation that's in front of the Massachusetts State Legislature and opportunities to talk to people either through email or visiting or whatever. If you're interested in that, it's a really good thing. So there you go. There's your summer camp is set. You've got all things to do. I will put links to that on the blog. Of course, the blog that will be at the website, which is massclimateaction.org/blog. Okay, so go there. You can find this podcast on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. You can also find us on iTunes. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And Mariah, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Great. Thanks to everyone for listening, guys. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.